Why don't we start there then with that? You can talk about, he was your uncle.
Grandfather.
Your grandfather, I can't forget. And how long ago was it that he told you that, that story about the Tobin? Do you remember?
It was in about, well, I don't remember the date, but he was about 83 years old at the time he told me.
And how old were you about that time?
I was about 16 or 17 years old.
Uh-huh.
You got done now?
Uh-huh. And
I was about 17 years old.
Mm-hmm. And he was, what you said, he was about 83?
Yes.
Uh-huh. How old was he when this thing happened?
He was about 82.
When he went out after the Tobin?
Oh, no.
When? How old was he then, do you remember?
I don't remember. It was in 1868.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right about the time that your grandfather came across.
I made a mistake. 1863 it was.
1863.
Yes.
About 5 years then before Grandfather Carson died.
Yes. You know, there have been a lot of stories written about Grandfather Tobin.
Uh-huh.
And especially about him having killed them two desperados, the Espinosa brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And being so many stories, now several times fellas came there to the ranch, Grandfather Tobin's ranch, because he lived 3 miles southwest of Fort Garland, and he was a buddy of my other grandfather, Kit Carson, who was commander of Fort Garland at one time. And so many stories, used to be fellows come in order to interview him about this Espinosa deal, and when they'd publish it, they'd publish a whole lot of stuff that wasn't true, that he hadn't told them at all.
Mm-hmm.
And he got so that towards the last to come there to interview him, and he wouldn't give an interview because they wouldn't put down what he told them. And they'd send him a copy of their story, and it wasn't lots of stuff in there that he hadn't told them at all, so he quit giving interviews.
Mm-hmm.
But what I got from him was right from him.
Mm-hmm.
It happened this way. You know, my grandfather used to raise his horses and some cattle, but his hobby was race horses. He used to sell lots of these horses to buyers from New York and eastern towns. They'd take them there and train them for polo ponies.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we had lost a little bunch of mares and the stallion, because when we'd round them up in the fall, most of them would come in by themselves, but this time there's a bunch of 8 mares and 1 stallion that didn't come in. So the next spring, my brother and I made 2 or 3 trips into the mountains looking for this bunch of horses, and eventually we run into a sheep herder, and he told us that he'd seen a little bunch of horses up in that part of the country where he was between Fort Garland and San Luis, but we couldn't find them. So then Grandfather and I went out to see if we could find them.
Mm-hmm.
And we were up we went up Indian Creek. That's a little creek that comes into the Sangre de Cristo just a few miles above Garland.
Mm-hmm.
But the head of it is between La Vita and Fort Garland.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we didn't find him, and he was 83 years old at the time, so it was getting late in the evening and he was getting pretty tired. And we started back, and I happened to think we were up on Indian Creek, and I says, Grandpa, I says, wasn't it up in here that you killed the Espinosas? And he says, yes. I says, whereabouts, do you remember? Now he says, that's been a long time ago. He says that I don't know as I could go to the exact spot anymore. Maybe I could, but his eyesight was failing him. He was getting old, and it was getting late in the day.
Could I interrupt you?
Yes.
What time of the year was this when you were up at Indian Creek with him?
That was sometime in May or June. Mm-hmm. But we stopped, and he showed me about where. He said, now Indian Creek goes up here a little ways. He says, there's another creek comes into Indian Creek from the north. And he says it was about probably 2 miles north of the junction of this little creek and Indian Creek. Now, this is the way it had happened, you know. If these two outlaws, the Espinosa brothers, had come up from New Mexico, and they'd been terrorizing this part of the country from New Mexico clear up into the South Park here in Colorado, and it was said that they had killed about 23 men on the rampage, and they had a grudge against the Americans. They've had so many different stories about it that nobody seems to know just what it was, but seems like it stemmed from the Mexican War. Mm-hmm. And they traveled through the country here, and any white man that they'd see, they'd kill. And so posses had been after him for 8 years, so had scouting and old soldiers from Fort Garland been after him, but they couldn't get him. They never come out in the open. They just traveled in the mountains from north to south of the Sangre de Cristo range. And the state had ordered a reward of some say $1,500, some say $2,500 for the capture of the Espinosas. So it happened that this time these Espinosa brothers had killed a man between La Vita and Fort Garland. He was a Frenchman, and he was coming over into the valley, and he was married to a Spanish woman. They were driving a buckboard with two mules, and just as he came over the top of Indian Creek Pass into the valley side, one of the mules was shot from ambush. And, of course, the fellow couldn't get any further. He had to stop. So they killed a man, these Espinosa brothers, and they kept the woman captive for, 3 or 4 days.
This fellow's wife.
This fellow's wife. Mm-hmm. And during the day, they'd go away. While she was held captive, but they tied her to a tree until they got back. And, one of these days, she got loose, and she started down the road towards Fort Garland. Well, the soldiers used to patrol that road once in a while, anyhow, and she was coming down George Fort Garland, and she met little bunch of soldiers that were on patrol.
Mm-hmm.
And they brought it back down to Fort Garland. There she told the commander at the fort her story and gave the location of where they'd killed her husband as well as she could. Well, this commander, he didn't know what to do because he'd been trying to get at these fellows for a long time. So he thought of Tom Tobin. So he sent after him at the ranch, and he said, "Tom," he says, "how we should go," he says, "and see if you can get these fellows. We know they're in this part of the country." And he says, "I think that you're the man that can track them down," because Tobin had a reputation among the old fellas that he was said that he was a man that could track a grasshopper through the sagebrush. So he did not want to go at that time. He said he couldn't leave because they were expecting a baby at the house at that time, any day. And he thought he better not go, but the commander there insisted that he go. So he decided to go. He went from the fort back to the ranch and changed horses. And the commander at the fort had said that he'd give him all the men and equipment that he wanted out of the fort. And grandfather says, "What would I do with a bunch of soldiers? I couldn't handle them," he says. "Besides, they've been after these fellows for so long and we can't get them. They couldn't get them this time either." So he went to the ranch, and there was a Spanish family working for him at the ranch. They had a boy about 15 years old, and he took this boy with him. So they left, and it was in the afternoon when they left, and they the next morning they started out early, and they came to the place where the buckboard was. They took the mule that they didn't kill with them, the Espinosas. So grandfather started to track them, and their tracks were headed south. Well, he followed the tracks south for a little ways, and he figured that they had backtracked and went north instead. So he went back to where he had started, and he started north, and sure enough, he picked up the tracks and they were headed north. Well, they only went about a mile, mile and a half, maybe 2 miles north. And being that he was a tracker, he figured that he wasn't very far behind them. So when the tracks got pretty hot, he left the boy with the two horses, and he told the boy, "Now," he says, "you see the shadow of this tree across the gulch there, across the creek." He says, "When that shadow points to that point of rocks on the other side," he says, "when the shadow points to them rocks," he says, "I'm not back. You take the horses and go back to the fort, because I won't be back." So he went, and the further he went, the hotter it got. So pretty soon he located them. They had a little fire going, a small fire, and the oldest one of these, no, it was only one brother that was left then. Before that time, these Espinosa brothers had held up a stagecoach up in South Park, and some fella had killed one of the Espinosa brothers. He killed him. So the other one that was left, he went down to New Mexico and got his nephew, a boy about 19, 20 years old, and he got to be worse than his uncle. So grandfather had a muzzle-loading rifle, you know, Hawkins rifle. That's the kind, you know, that used to have to pour the powder in and then ram the bullet in and put a cap on the tube before you could shoot. So he put two bullets in his mouth and he snuck up behind a fallen tree. He had to get close because then rifles didn't carry as far as our modern rifles do. And about one shot and he missed it, and he was a goner.
Mm-hmm.
So he snuck up behind this log, and the uncle, the old man, was cooking some meat on this campfire, and they'd killed some animal, and they had some of the meat hung up on the willows to dry. The young fellow was off a little ways taking care of the horses or something, and grandfather got within range, and he said this old fella was like an animal. He could sense danger.
Mm-hmm.
He hadn't seen grandfather or heard him, but his grandfather said he'd stoop over to stir his meat, but he'd straighten up right quick and always reach for his revolver, but he didn't take it out of the scabbard at all. Then he'd go ahead with meal. The grandfather didn't want to shoot him until he got the two of them together.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty soon the young fellow came and he started to unpack some sacks that they had, and they were talking, but grandfather was too far to hear just what they were saying. But he could have understood them because he could talk Spanish as well as they could. So he got ready, and the old man stooped over again to take care of his meat. And the young fella dumped something out of a sack, and grandfather took a crack, and the old man pitched over into the fire. But he wasn't dead. He rolled out of the fire. It only singed his whiskers, because grandfather said he'd never seen a more horrible looking thing than that old man. He probably hadn't had a bath for years, shaved or anything, and he was dirty, and his fingernails were so long they were curled over his fingers. But anyhow, he cracked down on the old man. The old man faced down into fire, and the young fella started to run. And grandfather called to him in Spanish and told him to stop. And he stopped long enough to fire his revolver at grandfather, but he missed and started to run again. Just as he got to the edge of the timber, grandfather cracked down on him and he went down. So grandfather walked over to the fire, and the old man was laying on his back. He wasn't dead, but he had his revolver in his hand, and he waded over across his face once or twice, and he said, "Damn the Americans." He didn't know who'd shot him. He hadn't seen nobody, but he just thought, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And so then grandfather went over to where the younger one was, the nephew, and he was dead. He broke his back and shot him someplace, so he was dead.
Mm-hmm.
And grandfather came back to the camp, and he wondered what he should do. He couldn't take the bodies to Fort Garland. He had to take some evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And he only had the two horses. It was a long ways. So he took his hunting knife and cut off the old man's head, and then went cut the young one's head, brought them and put them in the sack that the young one had emptied, walked over to where the horses were, and when he got there, the horses were there, but the boy was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And he had to look for him, and the boy had taken off a foot and hid in some rocks, but he finally found him and tied the heads on behind the saddle, and he came to the fort. When he got there in the evening, it was nearly sundown, there was an orderly in the commandant's office, but all the officers had gone down the road towards San Luis for a walk, evening walk. So he sent the orderly after him. They all came in, and his commander says, Tom, he says, did you have any luck? And grandfather went behind the door, picked up the sack and dumped the heads out. He said some of the women fainted, and he said the men turned green, most of them.
Mm-hmm.
And the commander says to the orderly, he says, you take them things out of here, he says, and bury them someplace. So grandfather went home, and you see, when he went after these fellas, he didn't know there'd been a reward offered by the state.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason he went there, just like all these old-timers done, he'd done it for humanity's sake and mm-hmm. to protect mankind that these fellas were killing all over the valley, all over the place. When he got to the home, quiet, the baby they were expecting was already there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was already there. So it was several years after that, at the time after he learned that there were the reward out for him, he didn't claim it until a few years later. He put in a claim to the state, and the legislature, he hauled back and forth, and didn't have no funds for that and things. And eventually, they paid him $400.
Mm-hmm. And it was supposed to be a reward of, what, $1,500 to $2,500, you said?
$1,500 or $2,500. Mm-hmm. Some of them said $1,500, some $2,500. And so he only got $400 from them.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them say that that he got $1,500, but he didn't. But you know, grandfather couldn't read or write. He mm-hmm. could write his name, and that's all. Now, if they ever paid $1,500 or $2,500, whoever done his correspondence with the state probably got the balance of it.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't know. Now, I've been asked lots of times. One time I was in Colorado Springs, and I met with a Historical Society of the Pikes Peak region, and they were talking about Kit Carson, my other grandfather. And eventually somebody brought up this Espinosa deal, and they started asking me about names and dates, you know. And I said, my gosh, I said, you know, I have such poor memory that I don't remember dates or names either. Well, one of them says, well, do you remember what time of year it was that your grandfather got these Espinosas? I says, yeah, got them in October. No, and He says, in what year? Do you remember that? And I said, yeah, it was 1863. He says, well, I thought you didn't remember dates. I said, well, I have a reason for remembering that date. And he says, why? And he said, I said, well, when he got home, that baby had been born that day. And that baby later became my mother. And so I remember the date of her birth and the year. So it was in October 1863.
Mm-hmm. And I wanted to ask you, too, about one of the old man, Espinosa. He said he shot him first. And he fell and rolled over the fire.
Yeah.
And is this the one he hit in the back?
No.
Broke his spine, it was the other one.
The other one.
What happened to this one? Did he just die there while he was there?
Oh, yeah.
He had the revolver in his hand. Did he try and shoot him with it? Or?
No. His grandfather seen that this old fellow, when he waved the revolver across his face a couple of times, then he passed away. But grandfather didn't have to shoot him again because he seen he was too far gone to do any damage.
Yeah.
So then was when he went to see about the boy.
Mm-hmm.
So when he got back after he shot the boy, the old man was already dead.
Oh. And he said that they had great big long fingernails. I can just imagine that dirty long fingernails.
Long fingernails. Big beards. Long black beard. And a fire had singed part of his beard away. Yeah. So he said he had an awful look inside.
What else were they wearing? Did he say anything else about clothes? Were they wearing buckskins or?
No, I suppose they were in buckskins.
Mm-hmm.
Now lots of people say, and stories have been written, that, lots of people say that some museum has souvenirs. Some of them say they had a diary, that there was a diary someplace in some museum that these Espinosas kept a diary, and the names of these fellows that they'd killed. Now, tell me, how would these fellows keep a diary when they were illiterate? They couldn't write, they couldn't read, and they didn't know who they killed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they weren't going to ask a man what his name was and then kill him.
Mm-hmm.
They'd kill all these fellows from ambush.
Mm-hmm. And you think that they, according to your grandpa, that they killed these people here because they had such a dislike for Americans?
That's right.
Because of the war, stemmed from the war?
Because it wasn't for robbery, because these fellows killed most of them were timbermen or prospectors or things like that. They couldn't think that they had any money with them. Besides, what good would money do the Espinosas? They didn't go to the towns. They would swoop down on some village, you know, Spanish village, change horses, take what horses they wanted that these fellows had, and provisions. And, of course, the Spanish people were most of them, not all, they were in sympathy with the Espinosa brothers, naturally.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of them, even there around Garland in later years, they had a dislike for my grandfather because just on account of the...
Going on after the Espinosa,
yeah.
I can imagine. Let's see, I was going to ask you about, do you remember who the commander was of the fort at that time? Can you remember
his name?
1863.
No, I don't remember what his name was. I hope that I don't remember. I forget.
I've got to remember some of the names of the people that were in command. I can't even remember.
I don't remember. And you know, that I was born in the same house where grandfather had his headquarters at Commandant of the Fort Garland. I was born in that same house.
During the time that he was the commander?
No.
No?
I wasn't. This happened in the... Well, Grandfather Carson was commander of Fort Garland in 1852.
That early?
And I wasn't born until 1883.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
But I was born in the same house where he had his headquarters, Fort Garland, which is still there.
Mm-hmm. So you were born now... about 20 years right after your mother was. Okay. I'd like to ask you, how were you related to Kit Carson? How was your father related to the original Kit Carson?
Well, my father was the original Kit Carson's eldest son. His name was William. And my father's name was William. And so that Kit Carson's eldest son, William, married Tom Tobin's youngest daughter. That was the one that was born when grandfather killed the Espinosas, you know.
And that was your mother?
My mother.
Mm-hmm. Okay.